Hello, welcome to Entertainment Weekly. I missed a couple weeks because I was out of town, and I've really missed recording and reading and knowing what's going on. I don't have a must list this time, or I just couldn't find it. I will say that the Golden Globes are this weekend as I'm recording, and so we've got a couple articles to start off with there. How to watch 2025 Golden Globes, and everything else you need to know about the Starry Awards show. This year's ceremony will be hosted by Nikki Glaser, who makes history as the first woman to host the show solo. This is by Lauren Huff. 2025 just started, and it's already kicking off in the most fashionable way possible with this year's star-studded Golden Globes. Hollywood's biggest party of the year, often the most hilariously unhinged of the annual awards shindigs, is already somehow upon us this Sunday, and it's set to make history with Emmy, Grammy, and Golden Globe-nominated comedian, actress, and TV presenter Nikki Glaser taking the stage to become the first woman to host the Globes solo. As you prepare to pop some bubbly, make your predictions and watch comfortably from the safety of your living room, here's everything you need to know about this year's Golden Globes show, from how to watch, to who is presenting, to who is poised to win. Big, and more. So when are the Golden Globes? The 82nd Golden Globe Awards will take place on Sunday, January 5th at the Beverly Hilton in Los Angeles, which has been its home since 1961. How can I watch the Golden Globes? This year's Golden Globes air live on CBS on Sunday, January 5th, 2025, at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and 5 p.m. Pacific Time. The awards show will be available to stream live on Paramount Plus for Paramount Plus with Showtime subscribers via the live feed of their local CBS affiliate on the service. Paramount Plus Essential subscribers will not have the options to stream the show live, but will have access to view the special on demand the day after it airs, in the U.S. only. Additionally, Paramount Plus is offering a 7-day free trial, inviting new audiences to try the service along with tuning in for this year's Golden Globes. For those without cable or Paramount Plus, TV services like Hulu Plus Live TV, Direct TV Stream, Fubo, and YouTube Live provide access to CBS and offer free trials as well. Is there a Golden Globes red carpet pre-show? Yes! Just like last year, the official pre-show for the Golden Globes, which is once again hosted in partnership with Variety and Entertainment Tonight, starts at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, 3:30 p.m. Pacific Time. The special will stream on Paramount Plus and across Penske's media's digital and social media platforms online, including at Variety, ET, Billboard, Rolling Stone, and WWD. Is that Women's Wear Daily? Who is hosting the 2025 Golden Globes? As mentioned, comedian Nikki Glaser is hosting this year's ceremony. Aside from being the first woman in the show's history to host solo, it's also a personal first for Glaser, who, despite plenty of experience as a TV host, has never fronted an awards show before. "I want to be sincere about how I'm feeling that night," Glaser told Entertainment Weekly ahead of the ceremony. "I'm a fangirl. I'm excited to be there. I don't want anything to be phoned in. I don't want anything to seem rehearsed. I really want to represent the people watching at home, so I want it to feel conversational. I want people to feel like, whoa, that's maybe how I would do it. I'm still a girl from St. Louis who can't believe she made it this far and gets to be around all these people she admires so much. So I'm going to try to inject as much of that as possible." Who is presenting? Presenters for the 82nd Annual Golden Globes include Andrew Garfield, Anthony Mackie, Anthony Ramos, Anya Taylor-Joy, Ariana DeBose, Aubrey Plaza, Auli Carvalho, Awkwafina, Brandi Carlile, Catherine O'Hara, Colin Farrell, Colman Domingo, Demi Moore, Dwayne Johnson, Edgar Ramirez, Elton John, Gal Gadot, Glenn Close, Jeff Goldblum, Jennifer Coolidge, Kaley Cuoco, Kate Hudson, Kathy Bates, Ki-Hui Kwan, Kerry Washington, Margaret Qualley, Melissa McCarthy, Michael Keaton, Michelle Yeoh, Miles Teller, Mindy Kaling, Morris Chestnut, Nate Bargatze, Nicolas Cage, Rachel Brosnan, Rob McElhenney, Salma Hayek-Pinal, Sarah Paulson, Seth Rogen, Sharon Stone, Vin Diesel, Viola Davis, and Zoe Kravitz. Who was nominated at this year's Golden Globes? Director Jacques Audiard's awards season juggernaut Emilia Perez heads into the evening with the most nominations, including nods for stars Selena Gomez, Zoe Saldana, and trailblazing trans performer Carl Sofia Gascon. In addition, it received 10 nominations, with notices for Best Motion Picture, Musical or Comedy, Best Director, Best Original Score, and 2 Best Original Song nominations, among others. Other films heading into the evening with a hefty amount of nominations include post-World War II drama The Brutalist and papacy thriller Conclave, with 7 and 6 nods, respectively. On the TV side, The Bear is the pack leader with nominations, with 5, followed closely by Only Murders in the Building and Shogun, with 4 each. And if we have a little extra time at the end of the show, I'll pop back for the full list, so that way we've got that to refer back to. But for now, let's take a look at the most shocking snubs and surprises from the 2025 Golden Globe nominations. The substance has more substance than expected, while the Globes aren't goggling at Goggins. This is by Joey Nolfi and Kristen Baldwin. The Golden Globe nominations just anointed a new class of honorees into the elite circles of awards season. But while the Globes have breakdowns for categories in more than one genre and stretch across film and TV, there's only so much gold that can go around in Hollywood. Ahead, Entertainment Weekly compiled a list of all the snubs and surprises from the nominations, from Danielle Deadweiler and Clarence Macklin being left out for their supporting film performances to the Golden Globes paying dust to Pachinko and Walton Goggins on the TV side. Find out which of the contenders who were nominated will win or lose at the Golden Globe ceremony Sunday, January 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on CBS and Paramount Plus. Our list is 10 items long, and the first item on the list is a snub, Pachinko on Apple TV. Sure, they're no longer called the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, but the Golden Globe Foundation is still a body made up of international journalists. This makes the voters' decision to ignore the year's best drama, which happens to be a foreign language series, even more disappointing. Alas, awards season history seems to be repeating itself with Pachinko, the glorious Apple TV Plus adaptation of Min Jin Lee's novel. With a peerless cast, including Korean superstar Lee Min-ho, Oscar winner Yoon Yoo-jung, and the incredible Min-ha Kim, epic international production and flawless writing led by showrunner Soo Hyo, Pachinko remains a literal masterpiece. Come on, awards voters! It's time to get with this program. Next is a surprise, Margaret Qualley in The Substance. After fronting a headline-making standing ovation at Cannes in May, Demi Moore's comeback vehicle, okay, not really a comeback, but for the sake of the narrative, bubbled up as a buzzy body horror sensation on the awards trail, too. Pardon the pun, but consider the Coralie Fargate-directed prestige hits, Oscar's chances activated even further. As the project scored several unexpected above-the-line nods from the Golden Globes, including for Farget's direction, screenwriting, and for Best Motion Picture, musical or comedy. The most surprising nod, however, came for Margaret Qualley's sublime supporting performance, not because it's undeserving, but because rarely do such excellent performances in genre pictures like The Substance get the awards attention they so deserve. Another surprise is Diego Luna in La Machina on Hulu. La Machina, Hulu's wonderfully weird, darkly comic series about an aging boxer, played by Gael Garcia Bernal, and his manager and best friend, played by Diego Luna, hidden under a mask of prosthetics, is one of the most original and entertaining shows of the year. Though it was snubbed in the limited series category, it's a thrill to see Luna recognized for his frantic and funny turn as Andy, a scheming boxing manager and plastic surgery addict. Luna's off-screen BFF, Bernal, deserved a nomination too, but perhaps Luna's recognition will prompt future awards voters to give this underrated gem a second look. A snub here is Walton Goggins from Fallout on Prime Video. Was the ghoul, the noseless, zombie-esque humanoid mutant played with such effortless charm by Walton Goggins in Fallout, simply too ghoulish for voters? It's an odd snub, given that Goggins' post-apocalyptic bounty hunter shares quite a few qualities with Landman's Tommy Norris, the oil company fixer character who earned a nomination for star Billy Bob Thornton. Both Tommy and Ghoul are no BS cowboys who radiate a blend of cocksure bravado and southern charm. But Tommy has a nose, so maybe that gave him the edge. Another snub here is Niecy Nash-Betts. The show is Grotesquerie on FX. It wasn't always easy to understand what was going on in this Baroque, mind-bending murder mystery from Ryan Murphy, John Robin Bates, and Joe Bacon, but the brilliance of star Niecy Nash-Betts was never in question. As Lois Tryon, an alcoholic detective who teams up with a true crime-loving nun, played by Michaela Diamond, to find a brutal serial killer, Nash-Betts kept viewers grounded amidst all the madness with her captivating and commanding intensity. Another snub here is Danielle Deadwyler in The Piano Lesson. Danielle Deadwyler's talents deserve far more than to have snub attached to her name across yet another awards season. After the performer was widely hailed for her work in 2022's Till, she was notably left off the Academy's roster of Best Actress nominees. Now, a similar narrative is building once again, this time for her supporting turn in the August Wilson adaptation of The Piano Lesson, for which she's earned standout critical praise for her arresting performance. Amid a crowded year for both leading and supporting ladies, Deadwyler didn't make the Globe's cut, but the Screen Actors Guild Awards could be her saving grace in the weeks ahead. Another snub, Clarence Macklin in Sing Sing. It would have been a feat of feats if Sing Sing could have sustained its momentum this long, with the film first debuting to uproarious praise during the 2023 festival season amid the notable acting strike that raged through the year. While Colman Domingo emerged with a Best Actor nod at the Golden Globes, the organization left Clarence Macklin, who earned a significant amount of critical praise for his supporting turn in the project too, off its roster, despite immense Oscar buzz landing him on many pundits' lists of prospective Best Supporting Actor contenders. Here's a surprise, a real pain. Most avid award season watchers knew a real pain would score a Best Supporting Actor nomination for Kieran Culkin's turn. After all, the Succession star is the statistical frontrunner when it comes to precursor nominations and victories. Few, however, could have predicted just how strongly the Jesse Eisenberg-directed drama would perform in above-the-line categories, with the movie itself earning a Best Motion Picture nomination atop Eisenberg's leading performance and the writer star's script, too. The film's standing with the Globes proves once again that Sundance-bowing titles are an enduring force to be reckoned with all year long. Our number 9th item on the list is a surprise, Fernanda Torres in I'm Still Here. Many domestic audiences will be introduced to Brazilian actress Fernanda Torres through her Golden Globes nomination for I'm Still Here. They'll get to know her, however, on the awards trail ahead as the Globes capped the star's hard-fought behind-the-scenes campaign with its first significant mainstream nomination yet. And our number 10th item on the list is a snub, John M. Chu for Wicked. Box office numbers and audience praise for Wicked soared high into the western sky, but the Golden Globes essentially dropped a house on director John M. Chu's prospects in the Best Director category by snubbing his exemplary effort in bringing the beloved musical to the big screen for the first time. The accomplished filmmaker's work bridged the divide between prestige and popular by scoring nods in both the Best Motion Picture, Musical or Comedy and Cinematic, and Box Office Achievement categories, so why not recognize the man who made the magic happen? That was our snubs and surprises from the 2025 Golden Globe nominations. It was by Joey Nulfi and Kristen Baldwin. From the TV section, we have Natasha Rothwell reveals how Belinda returns to The White Lotus for season 3. This is an Entertainment Weekly exclusive, and it's by Sydney Buxbaum. No one is more excited about Natasha Rothwell's return to The White Lotus than the actress herself. I would be on set, even when it wasn't my day shooting, just to watch the magic unfold, Rothwell tells Entertainment Weekly about the top-secret third season of creator Mike White's HBO dramedy. And I would be gagged as if I hadn't already read all the scripts, and I'd be like, oh, S, I really do think that this season is magic. That's the only word. After playing White Lotus Maui's spa manager, Belinda, in season 1 of the critically acclaimed satirical vacation anthology, Rothwell excitedly revealed the news on social media in April 2023 that she's checking back in as the only returning character for the Thailand set season 3. But details of how or why Belinda relocates from Hawaii have been kept under tighter security than liquids at TSA ever since. The tension has been unbearable, honestly, Rothwell says. My hairdresser, the cab driver, people have been shaking me down for information, and I'm just like, I've signed my life away. I can't tell you anything. Until now, Rothwell is finally able to spill her secrets about what brings Belinda back into the world of the White Lotus with main character energy after wealthy but fickle resort guest Tanya, played by Jennifer Coolidge, crushed her dreams of opening a wellness business together in the season 1 finale. She's still working at the White Lotus, and she's in Thailand doing sort of an exchange program to learn more about the wellness programs that the Thailand White Lotus offers, Rothwell reveals. She's going to be a guest for the first time, even though she's taking classes and it's a work trip. She's staying at the hotel, which is something that she hasn't done before, and so we get to see her really dip her toe into the other side of life of the upstairs downstairs of White Lotus. Rothwell says White Lotus creator White was really drawn to Asia and exploring spirituality through that lens, which is why the series is heading to Thailand for season 3. So not only is Belinda experiencing the culture shock of being in a new country, she's also going to be a fish out of water, living in the luxury that the White Lotus offers its guests. She's like, oh, someone is going to come in and clean my room and I don't know them, Rothwell says. she gets a firsthand look at some of the things that I think went unnoticed by her in season one. It's a really cool exploration of status in her journey and reconciling the fact that her dreams of owning the spa never came to fruition. So what do? I'm going to pick myself up and learn something new and still grow in her own way. When audiences last saw Belinda, she was reeling after Tanya callously informed her that she was pulling her funding for Belinda's business plan and just left a sum of money as a consolation prize. She was so devastated by Tanya taking away what little hope she had and shattering it, Rothwell says. Over the course of the Italy season of White Lotus in the world that we've created, she's been trying to dig herself out of that sadness and really be inspired again. Her purpose for coming to Thailand is to have a dream again. As for whether Belinda is aware of Tanya's tragic and perhaps karmic fate at the end of season two, I can't confirm or deny, Rothwell says with a cryptic smile. Signing up for the White Lotus Job Exchange Program represents the first time since Tanya that Belinda has put herself out there again professionally. She thinks she's going to throw herself into the deep end and learn more about herself and hopefully be ignited to dream again, Rothwell says. That's a really beautiful thing that we see this season with Belinda. Her eyes are being opened in new ways. Rothwell related to Belinda's season 3 journey on a deeply personal level because she lived in Tokyo for a year in her 20s when she was similarly searching for herself. I was really wanting to see the world in a new way, and the funny thing about that kind of travel, especially being a Westerner going to Asia, you think you're going to go there and just disappear, she says, but wherever you go, there you are. You're going to find yourself and you're going to have to start dealing with the fact that you have some issues. We'll see Belinda meet herself in a beautiful way. And because it wouldn't be a season of The White Lotus without a dead body, Rothwell laughs as she's trying to tiptoe around teasing this season's mystery. It's going to sound esoteric, but death is a part of life. And when you're on a spiritual journey, you do the whole full circle experience, she says. I think audiences are not going to be ready for how that is explored this season. Season 3 will also star new cast members Walton Goggins, Carrie Coon, Leslie Bibb, Jason Isaacs, Parker Posey, Michelle Monaghan, Amy Lou Wood, Patrick Schwarzenegger, and Blackpink's Lalissa Manabal. But since Coolidge's Tanya didn't survive her own return in season 2, does that mean Rothwell's Belinda could continue that trend? The only thing I can say is be ready for anything, Rothwell teases. It's kind of a hallmark of HBO. You think Game of Thrones, right? You love these characters and you can't imagine any of them not being there. But yeah, it's going to be a surprising experience. And the world of White Lotus is expanding in bigger ways, too. While I'm the only character from season 1 that's coming back, we do get to meet a voice we heard season 1, which was my son, who will be introduced this season. Finally, meeting Belinda's son raises the stakes on her experience this season. We're wanting to root for her, but we're also wanting to root for her and her son, Rothwell says. I can't get into particulars, but her son is older. He's finishing up school. It's that weird part of life when you realize your parents are human and you're an adult, and there's this kind of friendship that develops. I'm excited for audiences to see Belinda in relationship to her son and how they grow together over the course of the season. Rothwell was so invested in Belinda's journey that she basically binge-watched all of season 3 by reading every script in one sitting. The amount of times I would gasp and make noises, she trails off with a laugh. It was just me and my dog on the couch, and he was so confused. I was on the edge of my seat, and then at the end I was just like, oh my God, I can't wait for the world to see this. This will definitely top all of your expectations. The White Lotus Season 3 premieres February 16th on HBO. That was Natasha Rothwell reveals how Belinda returns to the White Lotus for season 3. That was by Sydney Buxbaum, and it was an Entertainment Weekly exclusive. Right now, it's already a pretty good time to say that you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is Entertainment Weekly, and I'm reading from their website, which is EW.com. Next from the TV section, I have a review, Squid Game Season 2, brutal thrills and lots of buildup. The Emmy-winning hit starring Lee Jung-jae returns to Netflix with 7 new episodes. This is by Kristen Baldwin. When debt-ridden gambler turned reluctant billionaire Song Ji-hoon, played by Lee Jung-jae, once again wakes up to Haydn's trumpet concerto in the echoey black-and-white dorm, a woman stops him as he solemnly makes his way to the floor. Player 456, I sense you're holding on to many things, notes player 44, played by Che Kuk-hee, fixing Ji-hoon with a piercing gaze. You can't leave or stay. You can't fight it. It's your destiny. In its long-awaited second season, Squid Game, like Ji-hoon himself, finds itself in a kind of limbo. Hwang Dong-hyuk's global phenomenon, a violent survival thriller about desperate people forced to play deadly children's games in hopes of winning life-changing cash, returns with 7 episodes that feel more like a bridge to the third and final season than a distinct arc of their own. Even so, the Netflix hit delivers a satisfying kick of visceral excitement with its brutal contests and a clutch of compelling new characters. 2 years after refusing to get on the plane to Los Angeles, Ji-hoon spends his days holed up in an abandoned Seoul motel, using his 45.6 billion won, the blood money as he calls it, to pay for a search party. From morning until night, the men under Ji-hoon's employ scour the city's subway platforms for the recruiter, played by Gong Hu, the handsome, besuited man who lures downtrodden folks to their almost certain death with a simple game of dejakji. Elsewhere in the city, Jun-ho, played by Wee Ha-jun, the detective who infiltrated the island and discovered that his missing brother, In-ho, played by Lee Byung-hun, was the game's infamous front man, is working as a traffic cop. Having failed to convince his superiors that a cabal of wealthy sickos are killing the poor for sport on a remote island, he continues his search for the perpetrators on his own time. Every night, Jun-ho takes to the seas with Captain Park, played by Oh Dal-soo, the fisherman who pulled him from the water after frontman shot him, in hopes of finding his way back to the game's locale. As fans already know from the Season 2 trailer, Ji-hoon returns to the games voluntarily, hoping to destroy the murderous operation from within. There he finds the spare dormitory once again packed with destitute folks who had the misfortune of earning an invitation from the recruiter. Young Sik, played by Yang Dong-jun, laden with gambling debts, is horrified to discover that his elderly mother, Jim Ja, played by Kang A-sim, also joined the games to pay off what he owes. Several players, including a purple-haired rapper who calls himself Thanos, played by Choi Sung-hyun, lost everything after investing in a new crypto scheme hawked by an influencer and their fellow competitor, MG Coin, played by Yim Si-won. And Ji-hoon is dismayed to find Jung-bae, played by Lee So-han, his good friend and pub owner, among the green track-suited throng. Once wide-eyed, terrified, and intermittently goofy, Ji-hoon is now stony and trauma-hardened, grimly determined to keep his fellow players alive long enough to convince them that they need to escape. Lee, who brought an endearing levity to Ji-hoon's travails in Season 1, manages his character's emotional shift beautifully. As he frantically tries to awaken his fellow players to the danger they're in ahead of the first game, Red Light, Green Light. With humor mostly sapped out of his hero, Huang adds compensatory comic relief through several new characters. Junbei forms a charming friendship with Dae Ho, played by Kang Ha-Nul, a young Marine who's eager to be of service to the older man. Jeon Suk-ho is consistently amusing as Woo Sik, an excitable small-time criminal who joins Jun-ho in the search for the island. And Choi, a well-known rapper off-screen, brings phenomenal charisma and swagger to Thanos, who maintains his MC bravado even in the most horrific circumstances. Yu's slick recruiter enjoys more screen time this season, and the actor explodes his character's chilling composure during a terrifying and delightfully unhinged reunion with Ji-hoon. As entertaining as this new group of players is, it's disappointing that season 2 has them spending more time in the dorms arguing about whether to continue the games than playing the games themselves. Early on, Ji-hoon reminds the competitors of Clause 3 in the consent form. The games may be terminated upon a majority vote, which results in too many scenes depicting the players' ongoing debate. Multiple episodes feature lengthy sequences in which the contestants argue before they vote over which way to vote, attempt to sway or intimidate each other during the vote, and then have somber discussions about the results after the vote. The conversations all center on the same dichotomy: those who want everyone to live versus those who are willing to kill to win. But whatever the point Huang may be trying to make about the value of optimism over nihilism, or vice versa, is crushed under the weight of unnecessary and unresolved repetition. Fear not, there are new games, and like Red Light, Green Light, they are incongruously barbaric. There is no place for spoilery details, but I can say that each game generates gut-twisting, yell-at-the-screen suspense, even on a second watch. And the game's announcer, voiced to eerie perfection by Jun Young-soo, gives the most chilling instruction yet. Players, please wait while we tidy up the venue. It all builds to an expected, but still gripping, showdown that sets up what's sure to be a blood-soaked battle royale in Season 3. The games won't end unless the world changes, warns the front man. Well, changing the world takes time, so if Ji-hoon needed this season to prepare, we owe it to him to be patient. That was Squid Game Season 2 Review, Brutal Thrills and Lots of Build-Up. It was by Kristen Baldwin, and Kristen is giving the show a grade of B. And also from the TV section, and just like that, Boss previews new cast, loves, and voiceover in Season 3. It's new everything. This is also an exclusive to Entertainment Weekly. Executive producer Michael Patrick King addresses those viral fake filming notices and gives the real tea on the next season. This is by Nick Romano. New Yorkers often stumble across those colorful filming notices out in the wild, wherever movie and TV productions reserve space throughout the city and its boroughs. That's especially true of And Just Like That, which, much like its predecessor Sex in the City, embeds itself in Manhattan to shoot every season. However, even the producers were thrown off when fake notices popped up, touting episode descriptions like, "Carrie can't prove it, but she thinks her dentist is switching out her teeth." Similar gag flyers for the show were taped up around New York streets during the filming of And Just Like That, Season 3. The viral culprit turned out to be local Brooklyn-based writer Kat Thek, and it was all done in good fun. "Of course we were aware of them," executive producer Michael Patrick King tells Entertainment Weekly. "I think it got us thrown off a location or two, but I'd rather have that than no energy around it. What I love is when what you're working on becomes an interactive art piece with the world. Everything from the fake locations and people's plot points that they decide to write, all the way up to the memes. anything that continually creates energy around the show is fantastic. King confirms season 3 will not, in fact, see Sarah Jessica Parker's Carrie Bradshaw date Mr. Bean and then accidentally send him a nude, as one fake notice read. And no, Kristen Davis's Charlotte York Goldenblatt will not become a juggalo. The phrase I would use for season 3 is, quote, new, unquote, he says, giving Entertainment Weekly the real intel on the next chapter. It's new everything. King acknowledges the show left the audience with a bit of a conundrum in the season 2 finale. Carrie hosted a farewell dinner for her apartment with all her close friends in attendance, so she can move into a luxury 3-floor home in Gramercy Park with her old and new love, Aiden Shaw, played by John Corbett. Except Aiden decides he needs a 5-year break, with perhaps a visit here and there for good behavior, to spend time with his sons. The first question I said to everybody was, "What exactly did Carrie agree to?" King recalls. "What is the arrangement that they made?" What I loved, even in the writer's room, there were 6 different versions of what she agreed to. When I knew there was still a gray area, I knew we had a potential great field to plow and figure out. A 5-year element is a big plot point for season 3, he confirms. I have no interest in torturing an audience too much. The Carrie-Aiden relationship is dramatic and exciting because it contains 2 points of view. I think half the fans who do not want Carrie to be in a relationship will be like, enough! The other half will understand that when you love somebody, what comes with them is their family. It's an interesting thing when you have Carrie Bradshaw in love figuring out how to make this work when, at a certain age, everyone has a past. There are a couple of booby traps in the Carrie Aiden history that we're very aware of as well. In addition to Carrie's Gramercy home, there's also a fresh start for Miranda Hobbs, played by Cynthia Nixon, who moves into a new apartment. And there are lots of new loves, King promises, as well as new obstacles for old loves. Outside of the core trio, season 2 ended with real estate broker Seema Patel, played by Sarita Chowdhury, finding her footing with a new beau, movie director Ravi Gordy, played by Armin Amiri, who went abroad to shoot his next project while he vacationed with Carrie in Greece. Meanwhile, documentarian Lisa Todd Wexley, played by Nicole Ari Parker, came to terms with her recent miscarriage, and Anthony Marantino, played by Mario Cantone, opened up, figuratively and sexually, to his Italian stallion boyfriend Giuseppe, played by Sebastiano Pigazzi. Not returning, however, are polarizing stand-up comma Shay Diaz, played by Sarah Ramirez, and Columbia Law School professor Nia Wallace, played by Karen Pittman. It was said Ramirez left when Shay's storyline reached a natural conclusion, i.e. their tense breakup with Miranda, while Pittman departed the show due to her filming obligations with Apple's The Morning Show and Netflix's Forever. We just moved forward because that's what happens in New York City or in life. Sometimes you see someone who is so important to you and then you don't see them again for 10 years, King comments on their departures. Shay and Nia could theoretically return at some point, should, and just like that, maintain a longer shelf life. King, however, says he doesn't have anything on the board just yet. They're still on the same island, but you don't see them, he notes. So we put Shay and Nia on a very luxurious boat and waved goodbye, throwing confetti as they parted from the shores of And Just Like That, and we moved forward with bringing in new boats, new characters, new ideas. Some of those new characters include Rosie O'Donnell, Sherry O'Terry, Mikad Brooks, Jonathan Cake, and Logan Marshall Green. Entertainment Weekly can also exclusively confirm Broadway and Agatha All Along star Patti LuPone will have a story arc in season 3, which will additionally see Kristen Schaal from Bob's Burgers. Plus, Rosemary DeWitt will return as Aiden's ex-wife, Kathy. As previously announced, Bagatze will now be a series regular alongside Dolly Wells, who played BBC producer Joy, suggesting the latter could become a new love interest for Miranda. Dating at 50 is an interesting thing, King teases. We have married characters, we have single characters, we have characters trying to work their current relationships out. It's kind of a maze of how you move through the world at this point in your life. Another new thing? Voiceover. Unlike Sex and the City, and just like that, only used Carrie's signature narration sparingly, typically over the final moments of each episode. King confirms the narration is coming back in a big way in season 3. Carrie's actually writing a new book, and the voiceover is a way into the book, King reveals. When we did voiceover on Sex and the City, Carrie had this overview of everything. She was telling you what to think and what to feel. For the first 2 seasons of And Just Like That, I took the voiceover away because I didn't think she knew what she was feeling. She's starting to feel things again and have an overview of where she is in the world. Writing a book is very private, and so, in an interesting way, it's almost a direct, intimate conversation with the viewer. Maybe there are things she's saying to the viewer that she wouldn't say to even her best friends. Spoiler alert, there won't be a confessional about her hiring Jim Carrey's attorney Fletcher Reed from 1997's Liar Liar after getting hit by a city bike. Yes. That was another of Theck's fake filming flyers. That was And Just Like That, Boss previews new cast, loves, and voiceover in season 3. It's new everything. It was by Nick Romano. That was an exclusive to Entertainment Weekly. Since it is still the beginning of the year, and I'm not positive we got to this while I was away, here are the 10 best TV shows of 2024 and 5 worst. The year's top television included A Shrewd Grandma, A Post-Apocalyptic Patriot, Warring Samurai, and the best show you're probably not watching. This is by Kristen Baldwin. Peak TV is dead, and that's just fine. Even though the volume of production is dropping fast, there's still way more TV than one dedicated fan could possibly get through every year. Entertainment Weekly's list of the year's best shows, featuring a few big hits and several low-profile gems, can help close that dreaded viewing gap, trademarked. And it's got plenty of binge fodder for your upcoming holiday break. The 10 best shows of 2024, number 10 is Matlock on CBS. You can never go wrong with old people solving mysteries. But this clever reinvention of the classic Andy Griffith series is more than comfort TV. It's a procedural with soul. Developed by showrunner Jenny Snyder Ehrman from Jane the Virgin, Matlock stars Kathy Bates as Madeline Kingston, a retired lawyer who goes undercover at the New York City law firm where she believes had a hand in her daughter's death from an opioid overdose. Bates, in full Southern grandma mode, is unsurprisingly delightful, and her comedic chemistry with co-star Skye P. Marshall as Madeline's boss Olympia gets better with each passing episode. Blending satisfying justice for the little guy cases and relatable human drama, like fraught family dynamics, the myth of work-life balance, and the unpredictability of grief, Matlock is both soothing and edifying, plus any series that gives us a weekly dose of Jason Ritter as Olympia's colleague and ex-husband Julian deserves to be celebrated. Number 9, Criminal Record on Apple TV+. A wonderfully unfussy detective yarn, Criminal Record follows 2 London cops, June Lanker, played by Cush Jumbo, a relative newcomer to the force, and Daniel Hegarty, played by Peter Capaldi, a respected veteran and part of the department's old white guy wall of silence, as they clash over the 2012 conviction of a black man, played by Tom Mutucci, for his girlfriend's murder. Created by Paul Ruttman from Indian Summers, Criminal Record eschews narrative gimmicks in favor of a straightforward and superbly nuanced story about generational conflict, the intractability of institutional racism and sexism, and the quiet satisfaction of tenacious police work. That, and the absolute brilliance of Capaldi and Jumbo as well-matched foils, is all the razzle-dazzle this drama needs. Number 8 is Phantasmas on HBO. I wake up and I just sort of Julio. Indeed, that's just what Julio Torres, comedian, visionary, and creator and star of Phantasmas, does throughout this 5-part fantasy set in a cartoonishly dystopian New York. Desperate to avoid the prison of conformity, be it an unremarkable black puffer coat or the government-issued proof of existence card, Julio searches for an all-important oyster earring. Meanwhile, Phantasmas veers into lavishly absurd vignettes, featuring some of the most surprising guest star turns of the year. Steve Buscemi as the letter Q poses Dominique Jackson as the algorithm. Emma Stone as a Real Housewives-esque reality star. In the end, Julio learns that the power to be exceptional and exceptionally weird was inside him all along. Number 7 is Mr. and Mrs. Smith on Prime Video. Another stellar entry in the recent wave of nostalgic procedural mysteries, see Peacock's Poker Face and CBS's Elsbeth and Matlock. This TV series spin on the 2005 Brad and Angie blockbuster pairs globe-trotting, big-budget spy adventures with a sharp and comedic portrait of a marriage in nearly constant crisis. Bolstered by the undeniable chemistry of leads Donald Glover and Maya Erskine, and packed with Emmy-nominated and winning guest stars, Mr. and Mrs. Smith is one of the few exceptions to the most reboots are unnecessary rule. Though it's still unclear if Glover and Erskine will return for season 2, I trust showrunner Francesca Sloan, who co-created the series with Glover, will crack her next mission, even if it morphs into an anthology. La Machina on Hulu is next. In today's television landscape, original ideas are increasingly rare, and in the case of La Machina, worth cherishing. The darkly comic boxing drama from Marco Ramirez stars Gael Garcia Bernal as Esteban La Machina Asuna, a 38-year-old boxing champ at the end of his career. When Esteban's flashy, fast-talking manager, Andy, played by Diego Luna, rendered nearly unrecognizable by prosthetics, convinces him to fight one last match, he unintentionally puts their lives and their decades of friendship in danger. Over the course of 6 electric episodes, we watch as Esteban's childhood trauma and boxing-induced brain damage converge to defeat him, while Andy is forced to confront his part in the champ's potential downfall. Lifelong pals Bernal and Luna are extraordinary and effortlessly funny as this dysfunctional duo whose humor can't quite mask their humiliation and heartbreak. Number 5 is The Vince Staples Show on Netflix. I went in expecting a Curb-style meta-spoof about Vince Staples' life as a well-known rapper and actor. Instead, this 5-episode reverie offers a grimly funny exploration of the 31-year-old's attempt to exist outside of the spotlight in Long Beach, California. Navigating challenges from the banal, a condescending bank manager, cops who confuse him for another black man, to surreal, amusement park mascots hell-bent on vengeance. Staples presents himself as a guy whose biggest goal in life isn't fame, it's uneventful anonymity. Featuring an exceptional performance from Vanessa Bell Calloway as Vince's hilariously ill-tempered mom, Anita, and a shockingly bleak cliffhanger, The Vince Staples Show was almost the most underappreciated comedy of the year. until Netflix renewed it for season 2. Number 4 is Fallout on Prime Video. There's nothing like a nuclear apocalypse to shatter a person's faith in humanity, but 200 years after the end of the world, rule-following patriot Lucy McLean, played by Ella Purnell, works to be a model citizen in her subterranean survival vault so she can one day emerge and help rebuild the nuke-shattered society. Above ground, though, it's every man, mutated mega-salamander, and irradiated zombie humanoid, Walton Goggins, for himself. A multifaceted apocalypse adventure that interrogates the concept of self-governance through the lens of morality, nihilism, and the great game of capitalism. Fallout believes that not even an A-bomb can eradicate our nation's determination to survive. Number 3 is Hacks on Max. In its seamless third season, Hacks finds an authentic way to bring wealthy, razor-witted comedian Deborah Vance, played by Jean Smart, and her rising star writer, Ava Daniels, played by Hannah Einbinder, back together, evolving their relationship from one of cross-generational mentorship to true, but turbulent, friendship. Even with two scene-stealing stars to service, Hacks managed to mine new comedic gold with the essential ensemble, including Caitlin Olson, three words, what a C word, and the show's other great power couple, Agent Jimmy, played by Paul W. Downs, and his flighty like a fox assistant, Kayla, played by Megan Stalter. Attention must be paid to this season's remarkable guest casting, too, which was unpredictable yet perfectly on point. "My mom's Deidre Hall from Days of Our Lives," notes Jimmy, casually uttering one of the biggest TV reveals of the year. Yes, these Emmy-winning hacks are at the top of the comedy game. Number 2, Shogun on FX. In an era of second-screen viewing, Shogun is the rare show that requires and earns our full attention. This opulently produced, sprawling adaptation of James Clavell's best-selling novel made a knotty power struggle between feudal Japanese leaders into a riveting, and sometimes laugh-out-loud funny, historical soap opera. Anchored by the romance between Mariko, played by Anna Soy, loyal interpreter for Lord Torinaga, played by Hiroyuki Sanada, and captive British soldier John Blackthorne, played by Cosmo Jarvis, Shogun took home a stunning 18 Emmy Awards and earned a second and third season from FX. 44 years ago, NBC told Clavell's story through the perspective of his white hero. This Shogun brought the author's enduring tale into the modern age by giving Torinaga and Mariko their rightful place in the spotlight. The result was an epic, moving testament to the transcendent power of honor and fidelity. And number 1, Pachinko on Apple TV+. The most moving thing I've seen on TV this year was Pachinko's Sunja, played by Minha Kim, Kyung-hee, played by Eun-chi Young, and Yang-jin, played by In-ji Young, packing a suitcase. It's 1950, and Sunja's brilliant son, Noah, played by Tae-jun Kang, is leaving Osaka for Waseda University in Tokyo. Kneeling on the floor of their humble home, the women iron and fold the boys' clothing, gently smoothing and arranging the garments in a kind of sacred silence. It's a moment of intense pride and bittersweet loss for Sunja, who has endured a lifetime of suffering, exile, war, poverty, widowhood, in her 30-something years on Earth. Placing a shirt in her son's suitcase, Sunja presses her hands onto the crisp white cloth for an extra few seconds before wiping away an errant tear and getting back to work. Not a moment is wasted in Pachinko's impeccable second season, which continues its multi-generational saga about the burden, blessing, and legacy of family sacrifice. Adapted by Soo Hyu from Min-ji Lee's 2017 epic, Pachinko is a breathtaking, beautiful example of television's true potential. If only Apple would treat it as such by ordering a third season. Those are the best, and the honorable mentions are Squid Game Season 2 on Netflix. Spoiler constraints prohibit me from saying much at all, but just know that with this 7-episode sophomore season, creator Hwang Dong-hyuk puts grim-faced Ji-hung through the candy-colored ringer again. Evil on Paramount Plus is next. Evil began as a smart but somewhat routine science versus religion procedural, following a trio of supernatural assessors, forensic psychologist Dr. Kristen Bouchard, Father David Acosta, and atheist and tech whiz Ben Shakir, working for the Catholic Church. 4 increasingly weird seasons and 1 liberating network change later, Robert and Michelle King's drama ended as an otherworldly wonder that interpreted the dread of modern living through pitch-black humor, empathy, and an unfaltering undercurrent of hope. The Traitors on Peacock. In Season 2, this murder mystery competition ditched the dead weight of real people contestants, stacking a grand Scottish castle with reality TV luminaries, fame-adjacent public figures, even a former UK politician, and may the best manipulator win. Lording over the deliciously melodramatic proceedings is Alan Cumming, whose theatrical commitment to the bit helped him put an end to RuPaul's 8-year winning streak at the Emmys. Black Doves on Netflix is also on the list, the best spy-assassin buddy comedy since Killing Eve Season 1. Keira Knightley stars as Helen, a UK politician's wife who's spent the last decade selling government secrets to the highest bidder on behalf of the titular spy organization. Ben Whishaw is Sam, Helen's old friend and a crack assassin, who's brought in to help Helen find the people who killed her lover. The Jared Carmichael reality show on HBO is also on the best list. I'm running out of time, so I'm going to mention the worst. I'm going to jump over and mention the worst. Cruel Intentions on Prime Video. The Women of Landman. That's on Paramount Plus. Ted on Peacock. Orphan Black. Echoes on AMC. And Beauty in Black on Netflix. I know I cut that short there, but I wanted to get through the best shows for sure. That was by Kristen Baldwin. So let's wrap this up. I will thank you all for listening this week. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona, and this has been Entertainment Weekly. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury, who's been reading from Entertainment Weekly's website, which is EW.com. Please come back next week to hear what I found, and we'll catch up on all those Golden Globes winners. Until then, goodbye.